This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Hi, everyone. I am so thrilled to be here today with my dear friend and 17 and a half year Emma board member, Wendy Malik. You all know Wendy from her several decades on the best television shows on TV, sitcoms. She is the multi-talented actor, activist, and incredible board member, as I said, and really thrilled to be here with Wendy right now. Hi, Wend. We came to Emma literally at the same time. You joined like 2 or 3 months before, and my first board meeting that I led that I had no idea what I was doing.
But you acted as if you knew what you
did
were
I
doing.
Did I really?
Yeah. And that's what we usually do until we figure stuff
well,
out.
Well, totally.
I mean, if you have a passion for something and you immerse yourself in it, sometimes you have to do that catch-up period, I think.
I think
that's just how life works. But, you know, for me, it was the invitation by Jim Lenfesti,
yes,
who was a temporary president.
Who asked me to come run
the organization. I'm sure he did. He said, please get here fast.
Yes, he did, not knowing me at all, by the way.
Yeah, and he was just, we had a mutual friend, Randy Johnson, and I met him socially, and we started talking, and I told him about, you know, my love of animals, and that was involved with, I think, the Literacy Volunteers of America. Anyway, we went into sort of various causes we had been impacted by, and our concerns for the environment. That was kind of the big topic of the time. And he said, you really need to come to this. You need to come join this board. And I said, what board? And I knew that Ed Begley was part of it.
Right.
We had worked together. So that was kind of
my entree. I was at Ed's house the other day, so I'll have to tell you about
it. Oh, which I've not seen
amazing.
Yet.
Yeah. Anyway.
It should be.
It is.
All this time.
It is.
And if not Ed, who?
That's right. Well, you, so we can.
But I'm so glad. I mean, you sort of came in exactly. This is not just blowing smoke up your ass.
Yes,
I'm just saying it was a very good fit because we needed somebody who, and this is the thing I like about so many of the leaders of the groups that I'm involved in, whether it's the Humane Society or Return to Freedom or you or Creative Coalition, you need to have solution-oriented leaders in these nonprofits that will help us be aspirational and not go like want to tear your hair out because
I
it's
even
so
tell
challenging.
Her to say that, P.S. By the way,
yeah, because but you managed to somehow help us feel like it's all possible and keep moving the ball forward, even if we have to go backwards a couple of times in order to get something moving forward. And that, without hope, you know, it's like desperation or what is it? Bernie Sanders says, despair is not an option.
Right.
I love that.
Right. It's so true, and it's how we live.
Yeah,
all of us,
yeah,
collectively. So yeah, there's no room for negativity, trashing, anger. It's all about we have solutions. Let's all feel empowered and let's do them together.
And the big challenge, which I think has become crystal clear, particularly now, as it feels like 45 years ago, with us being so polarized, the added component that I think a lot of us have been really slow to come to the dance with is diplomacy.
Right.
You know, and the idea that it's great to get things off your chest and scream and shout, but if you start attacking verbally somebody or being rude or violent, it's not going to get you anywhere.
Right.
You might feel good for that moment, but in terms of really changing the paradigm of how things are going to work out, that doesn't really help us.
No, and we have never for one second been in that space. We're the positive. You know, that's the outlook that we have, because that's how you get things done. And it's also how you make people feel good and support what you're doing.
Right.
So it's huge. But getting back to like our first board meeting that apparently I absolutely was a good actor in.
You remember nothing. It's like being in shock.
I know. But we knew that we had to put on our 10th anniversary of the Emma Awards that year.
Was that the one I did with David?
Yes.
Yeah, David Spade and I,
not knowing you at all, just said, will you help me? Will you and David Spade host the awards? And do you remember? All you said was, of course, and I'll make him do it.
And I did have to make him because he just hated to ever step his foot into any sort of charity work because he was afraid everybody would want him.
Right.
And I said, no, you have to.
Yes.
You have too much. You have too much and you haven't given back enough. He went, oh, I hate you. All right.
Right. Well, you had no qualms that he was going to do it. You were like, he will totally do it if I tell him to. And so that worked.
Yeah, I guilted him into it.
As a Jew, this works so well. They didn't have to cut that, but whatever. But it's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah, it completely works. And you guys were magnificent. And
we were at the Santa Monica
airport where we're going back.
Yeah. Yes. So that's pretty interesting.
It's so amazing.
Yeah.
And it was incredibly successful. And that was the beginning of our friendship.
Yeah.
Which is so great because we jumped into this and we realized we're like...
But don't you find as the older you get... I mean, you have these old friends maybe you knew since you were a kid. I've met some of them at your birthday parties.
Right.
And I have some of those dear old friends from way back when. But I noticed that the women I have taken into my life as part of my inner circle in the last 20 years or so are all people I do work with.
Yes.
And I'm not talking about just my profession. I'm talking about
the
women who I am involved in some sort of cause or passion with, because that just enriches
people.
That enriches every time you get together, something good comes out of that, something creative, something positive, something that I think inspires us to keep going. It's sort of
I so agree.
It's a great way to support and be entertained and
it's
do
true.
Some good stuff.
Right. Like we've been doing this for 17 years.
Yeah.
That's a long time. And, you know, it's so beyond that, but that is the layer that sort of defines who you are, and then everything else has to work. And so it's like, you know, it's that girlfriend thing.
Yeah.
And it's true. You have these really old friends who you have a past with, but this is
like
past
the people
too,
we have the present and the future with, kind of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, when I think about my best girlfriends.
Who I know.
They're like, you know, a conductor who I did a concert with her last night with Rachel Warby and Marsha Hurwitz is one of my agents who happens to be one of my best friends,
amazing.
And you, and you know, it's just, I think it adds that, as you said, that sort of layer that just makes it just gives it a richness, and it gives it a kind of a gravitas that otherwise it wouldn't have.
That's true.
You know, and then you still can go out for lunch.
Right. Yes.
And
talk things.
About
yes.
and talk about your hair.
Yes, absolutely. Hair is very important. Speaking about connections, you and your husband, Richard, met in Mexico building houses.
Yes.
Did you both come to it with who you are, and or did your union sort of make everything in terms of your activist and environmentalism and your passions grow because that's kind of where you met?
Oh, I think it definitely... lit a fire under that and opened up doors for both of us in ways we hadn't anticipated. I was sort of at a crossroads in my life, and a marriage had ended, and I was kind of all over the place. And a friend invited me down to Tijuana to build these houses for poor families in this dump. And I said, sure. And I ended up meeting him over the vegetarian spaghetti sauce one night. And I thought, God, what an interesting guy. He's so different from the people I know. And was so not Hollywood at all. I mean, you know, was a guy who you could tell he worked. He had the hands of a working guy. And, you know, kind of those wonderful creases of somebody who'd been outside much of his life. I found out later he'd lived in Africa for 7 years. And in the course of that weekend, the first night we were there, I went out to pee in the field. We were all sleeping out, and I went behind a rock, and it turned out to be him. And he woke up, and I was very embarrassed. And then he started laughing, and we got to talking the next day.
I didn't know that part.
No,
that one.
So I guess I marked my territory.
Yeah, you did.
But during the course of that weekend, he showed me how to saw. He taught me how to saw and had a hammer. And by the end of it, he said, would you like to go to Africa with me on a motorcycle this summer? And I thought, yeah, I've never been asked that. That is like the coolest future date I could imagine. So we started dating, and we took motorcycle lessons together, and we took three bikes over to Africa and took them to a medical center that he had built in Congo. So that was a huge opening to the third world in a way that I had been to Africa before as a model, but this was very, very different. And since then, we have supported a little medical center there. And yeah, no, he's helped me. I often say that I make him laugh and he makes me think. That's sort of the abbreviated version.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's definitely reminded me to go outside and be part of the world and not just live in my make-believe world, which I'm very happy to do.
Where? Because I met you when you were obviously in the little,
my tiny little off-the-grid cabin. Yeah.
Did you buy that because of what you wanted to do as a lifestyle? Because you've had that for what? How long?
Oh, since 90. We bought the property probably about 18 years ago. We lived up there on a friend's
property. So literally, you were only there a year before I went there.
Probably.
That's so funny. Because that's where you were.
In the tiny one off the grid,
for really a long time.
Yeah, yeah. We were in another little one before that on a friend's property, but yeah.
But you would not have done that.
Oh, no. No. No, there's no way.
Yeah.
I couldn't possibly have. I mean, right. I didn't know I could do that.
Right.
Frankly.
Right.
I lived in New York for 17 years and was very happy on the Upper West Side going out for dinner.
Explain what it looks like because I have it imprinted in my mind.
We have now built our wonderful house, but we did for five years or seven years?
I think it was seven.
It was a really long time. Right. And I kept taking whatever job would get me out of town so I could stay in a hotel. It was this simple little cabin, very sweet, very charming, but
it really is
seriously off the grid. You know, we had our own well, we had solar panels, we had a little tiny generator, a backup generator. It was a dirt road. The shower was outside, but he did put a lovely clawfoot bathtub in the bathroom.
Yes, I remember.
So that I could at least take a hot bath. We had a wood burning fireplace. That was the heater. I mean, it was basic.
But we had
40 acres of land.
Yeah.
And we got to have horses and dogs.
Right away.
Yeah. And cats. And so, I mean, it had its perks, but it was very tiny. I mean, I think it was 600 square feet.
Yeah,
maybe 500.
It was really small.
It was really tiny. Yeah, but boy, do I ever appreciate my house, which it took 5 years to build.
5 years to build because Richard was.
He was over all of it. Yeah,
right. And it's so beautiful, and it's completely sustainable as well.
It's sustainable, and it's all. It's passive solar, and we have a wonderful array of solar panels. We have our own well again, which we had to dig deeper several years ago because of the drought. So I am so keenly aware of water. And when I see people turn on a water faucet, and now, of course, they forget because we've had some rain.
Right.
But the deal is, and it doesn't matter if I'm I can be on the East Coast. I was just in Palm Beach for a Humane Society event and somebody turned the water on and started talking to me. I said, what are you doing? Excuse me.
Your body.
Oh, no, it makes it pains me.
I know, me too.
I said, this is like gold, okay?
Right.
This is the new oil and you got to think about it. It's finite.
Right.
Yeah.
But what are some of the other things in the house? Because the house is so beautiful and feels so like you could breathe inside and out. So other than being...
Yeah, there's a lot of amazing ventilation and circulation.
Yeah.
We have radiant heat in the floors because it's got fairly high ceilings. And we have big barn doors that close off the western sun. So it keeps the heat in the winter and allows the cool to stay in the summer. In the summer, we can open up sliding doors all around the great room so that the air just circulates all the way through.
And it does, because it can be hot up there in the summer, but it really does.
That house is always comfortable and really thick walls. You know, it's got really good insulation and rusted steel beams that are all exposed. And it took me a long time to get into the LED thing because I'm really sensitive to light. But they're doing so much better with that now.
My whole house is.
Yeah. Now you actually can find that softer, more.
Yes. You can
mellow.
Actually dim.
Yeah. That's
you
huge
do for
me.
A long time. Me too.
Because my house, it is kind of a little bit like Blanche DuBois. But I look really good.
Yeah. The guest bathroom is not that light.
No.
No. But it's fabulous because you can do anything now with the lighting.
Yeah, it's much
better. It's so not like it was 100 years ago.
I still will go, but I still will not sit under a light over my head. Like, you're really pushing things here.
Well, you know what? I have to be honest. Everything that I learned about, like, looking, although I don't really retain all of it, or standing on a carpet or smiling, you taught me.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden I was put into this. I'm like, okay, how do I do this? And so you're like, don't do this. Don't do this.
Yeah, when you take selfies, don't hold them down low. Always hold it up
that.
A little
that's
bit.
Why, yeah, that's
oh, vanity, thy name is woman.
Yes. But, you know, those things are important.
Well, you know, my theory is this. I'm 66 years old. And I want to keep on working for as long as I possibly can. And I want to maximize the things that are my strengths and, you know, and minimize the things that are not so much. So I don't want to go through any big giant whoop of trying to change the way I look, but I want to just be the best I can.
Right.
And to feel good in my own skin. I think that's what beauty is as you get older. I really think the women I find the most beautiful emanate something from inside. It's not the surface stuff anymore.
Right.
And I'm not saying that I don't think about that, but.
Right. But no, by the way, you just shocked everybody because nobody knows.
Well, everybody, whoever goes on, I tell people all the time.
Because I know, but it's like.
But I do think it's something that women have to stop hiding because it's your experience. It's your, you know, that's part of what makes you you.
It's you know? So true. First of all, I think that it's like a detriment when you try to lie about it.
Well, and also, I want to look good for my age, not like somebody who looks really exhausted for somebody you're pretending to be.
We are such close friends because I've always said that too. Like, I'd rather be like, oh, you are?
Yeah. And so, I mean, I went around saying, no, I'm 50, and they go, right. Uh huh.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. You having a hard day?
I just decided when somebody stopped saying, you have 4 grandchildren, that's impossible. Then I get nervous. So that's like what I want to hear when I talk to people. So these are the little parameters. Like, yeah, don't lie. Don't ever lie. Where did horses start in your life?
Well, not until, I mean, I always have loved them from afar, but I never had access to them growing up. And with the exception of a few little trail rides on odd occasions, you know. But it was when I moved to the Santa Monica Mountains and I took my first horseback riding lesson. And I always loved the clothes, the English riding gear was just
amazing.
Fabulous.
Yeah, fabulous.
So I wanted to do my little National Velvet thing.
Yeah.
And I took some lessons and I fell in love with it. And I fell in love with this crazy thoroughbred racehorse and bought him. And he taught me everything I know. That guy was out of his mind. And we were trail riding where he would just break into a complete nervous gallop and I just hold on for dear life. And I kind of got to the point where I have a pretty good seat. So I strictly trail ride. My neighbor and best friend at the time bought a horse around the same time. And so we would ride every morning before I went to work on Just Shoot Me. I rode probably 4 days a week.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah.
And over time, we got more horses, and as one would retire, we'd get another one to ride. And right now, we now have 4. I gave birth to one 16 years ago. I had a mare, and I said to my husband, look, I've never had kids. Don't you think I could maybe give birth to one animal?
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, I guess you can have one baby. So we had a baby, Rosie and I. My mare and I had a buckskin quarter horse. He's beautiful. And I slept in the barn for 3 nights waiting for him to arrive. And I did the whole imprinting thing. So he now thinks of me and his mother. We were both his moms. She passed away. We had to put her down last year.
Yeah.
Then some years later, a woman, Deanne Stillman, who I had known in New York a long time ago, who wrote for Saturday Night Live and who's a wonderful writer, sent me her book, Mustang, and told me about the plight of wild horses on our public lands. And I knew nothing about it. And most Americans don't know that we had thousands of wild horses running free on our federal, on our public lands. And they were protected by a federal law that Nixon signed in 1971.
Yeah. Wow.
And it has been slowly sort of, you know, knocked down over the years and weakened. And now there are now 45,000 wild horses in federal holding facilities, and it's costing millions of dollars a year. And they still round them up with helicopters, and they're doing it as we speak in Utah. And they rip the stallions away from their herds. There are always casualties and fatalities when this happens. And it's so heartbreaking to see them go from running free to being in these basically concentration camps, where they will try to adopt them out, but they can't possibly adopt out all these wild horses. So eventually, they're sold to the highest bidder, and that bidder can be a kill buyer, which oftentimes they had over 100,000 horses from the wild horse population, and also horses that, you know, people no longer want to ride from the track or from the show circuit, who get bought by these kill buyers and then get sort of smuggled in the slaughter pipeline and end up either in Mexico or Canada and are slaughtered for meat. And it's pretty horrific when you find out about how flight animals, how difficult it is to kill a horse. It's pretty scary.
It's crazy too. It's so heartbreaking, and people don't really know about it. We need to do a campaign about that.
That would be great.
Let's do that.
Let's put that
on her page.
Because, well, and I've been working, I work, as you know, I'm a spokesperson for the Humane Society of the United States, and they've been doing wonderful work in terms of horse, stopping horse abuse and then return to freedom. Netta DiMaio, who's a dear friend of mine, she has about 300 wild horses, and she saves them, rescues them from roundups.
Barbara.
That's the one up in Lompoc,
right.
And she keeps the herds intact. And she's working with Purdue University, Davis, you know, and the BLM, who are finally coming around and realizing this is a broken system. This is not sustainable, and it's expensive, and it's inhumane. And they're now looking at new ways to use PZP, you know, for... So PZP will help to temporarily sterilize. It doesn't completely sterilize them forever, but you can shoot them with the little guns, little dart guns. Huh. And you can then manage the herd size.
Oh.
You know, and right now... You know what it is as an environmentalist. There's a land grab for the public lands. There are those competing voices of let us get in there and drill.
Right.
There's money to be made. There's oil.
Right.
There's,
right.
And, of course, there are ranchers. And right now it's, I think, 35 to 1 cows to horses and sometimes 50 to 1 cows to horses and burros.
Wow.
So we're just asking to, like, maintain the herds that exist, keep their populations from being overgrown, but allow for the fact that this is a symbol of who we are as Americans. This is like, they're the symbol of all the things that are wild and free that sort of made us who we are. And they helped us fight our wars and deliver our mail. And it's just, when you see them in the wild, it is so magnificent. And we're sort of thinking about different ways that we can get more of the public to actually experience the majesty of this.
Right.
You know, I keep thinking there should be something with the national parks
and
veterans with PTSD and wild horses that could just bring this together
so
in a
much.
Way that people could come and experience that and people could heal from just being around it. And because
there's a big picture program that we can do with this, partnering with them. And I think that we need to do this. We need to decide we're doing this at a certain time and put them together. I can get the national parks, and I know we could find the bike. Oh, Dan can help us with the veteran group.
Well, you know what? It would be so exciting to do that, because I think, as we have learned,
the
media right now is that's the place to go.
It's everything.
And we can't allow just one group to co-opt Facebook and Twitter and all of that to promote their agenda.
And we can't use it negatively. And that's what a lot of people are doing.
And I think that there are people who think, give us back our public lands and let us make some money off it. It's not going to help your everyday person. That's going to be for the same people who have been sort of exploiting the land all this time. And it doesn't trickle down to your every... This is supposed to be a place you can take your family and see natural beauty.
Right.
And experience.
And
the tonic of wildness. Yeah.
I like that. The tonic of wildness.
Actually, I think...
That's not a bad...
I think Richard Nixon said that.
Did he really?
I think he said, we need the tonic of wildness.
It's amazing what he did, certain things that like...
Yeah, and China.
I know. It is...
He wasn't all bad. He was just crazy at the end.
He was just crazy himself. He was his own worst enemy.
He was challenged.
Yes, he was. But...
But so am I.
So are we all. No, that's... I really love that as a program for us, because I think that's a great idea. where you tell Dan that we should work together, and because it needs a voice, and
Absolutely.
We're that voice. Like, that's why you joined.
Well, and actually, it would be great to get like Joe Mantegna,
yeah,
who works with the veterans with and the does that thing too. Every year in Washington, and is a Republican. And
is he a Republican?
Yeah,
that's great.
And I mean, you have to bring people from all sides into this thing. But these are 85% of Americans went nuts last year when there was an independent study by the BLM or the Department of the Interior, wondering what we should do. How do we handle all these horses that nobody wants, that they've rounded up? And they were talking about euthanizing them. And there was such a response from the public that they just said, oh, never mind, we're not doing
right.
that. But I mean, people freaked out because
it's cross everything.
85% of Americans believe that we should have horses on the range where they belong.
Right.
You know?
Right. And again, this is across all ideal, you know,
ideologies.
Thank you, because I can't talk. Ideologies. This is everybody. And so this is something that I think that we could really put a face to and really promote in the proper way, the way we've done it with, you know, cars and lifestyle and everything else. This is something that I think that people would really respond to. There's no one who doesn't put their kid on a horse.
And what they do with hypotherapy these days, you know, it's such a palliative, wonderful healing.
Right.
Horses are amazing. We adopted two of them. I think you know that from Return to Freedom. So we have two from a herd, the Chalice herd in Idaho. Mm-hmm. And I got them when they were 2 years old. One of them is the sweetest, gentlest one, Stuart. And then Bo is a madman. He's wild and will probably always be wild. Uh-huh. And when I get on him, he likes to go backwards with me on him down steep hills.
No.
Yes. And he's so great to ride. Oh, I love to ride this horse. He has the most comfortable back. I can ride him with just a pad, and it's so divine. But we have this little problem
of
going backwards down a hill.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, man, I'm too old for this shit. I can't. But just hanging out with him, he's wonderful. I mean, he likes to come up to me, and they hang with me in a way that the other horses don't.
Really?
And I think it's that.
Even your baby?
Yeah, even my baby. I mean, he's like, what do you have for me? Nothing? Okay, well, goodbye.
Well, he's like,
no, he can be sweet. But these two, it's a different thing. And I think they just are so much more attuned to the world, having been wild.
Right.
I think there's a curiosity in them that just checks things out. They smell things more. They hang with you. And then if they feel comfortable, they'll just be with you.
There's also the appreciation of love.
Yeah, I think
which is huge. Where
it's
the other ones take it for granted.
Yeah, it's trust.
Yeah,
yeah, it's really earning their trust, and there's a real. It's very cool to hang out with them.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's amazing. I mean, I've obviously been there and seen them, and they're so gorgeous.
They're so gorgeous.
Right.
I mean, you don't even have to groom them. Like, dirt falls off of them.
We're doing something different for us in March, and we're doing our first Emma Impact Summit that you are going to be a part of, and we found a great panel for you, and Ed's going to be on the panel.
Oh, good.
Ed Begley.
Excellent.
So that's good. He's actually done a podcast for us as well.
Oh, right? Good. Oh, good.
But
do you know how I met Ed?
Remind me.
I met Ed doing a pilot. Actually, I'd known him before that. I think we'd met sometime before.
This is when you fell in love with Ed.
Oh, I adored him. I mean, who doesn't?
I know.
But we did a pilot together and played husband and wife. And during the pilot, I had a baby. It's interesting. But he took me over to his house one night. He said, I want you to come over and see my garbage. So I went to his house, and he literally had one tiny little, like a brown lunch bag.
Yeah.
And that was all the garbage he had for an entire week. Everything else was recycled.
He wasn't married yet, was he, Rochelle?
No, he did not. There was no woman in his life at that point. Yeah, no. Yeah, and his closet probably wasn't as full either. And he was riding his bike everywhere with his dry cleaning. But I just remember looking at it and thinking, that is extraordinary that you really could get your footprint down to a little tiny brown bag. And I'm afraid I never got close to that, but it does sort of give you pause when you have living examples of people you really admire and enjoy and like and love, that we all can do better with that. Every time I go in my closet, I try to live by that rule of every time you buy something, you give something away. because it helps you keep from cluttering, you be conscious about, like, do you really need it? Because what are you going to get rid of if you get that?
And think about all the stuff you have in your closet that you don't use ever. It's been like how many years?
Yeah. And maybe somebody could really use that. And also, going back to the, where does, at what cost is the stuff that you have in your life? Like, where does it come from? Who made it? Where was it grown? Who did it hurt, if anybody? And how good is it for you, and how good is it for the earth?
How do you monitor that with yourself?
I mean, I don't do it all the time because it would be exhausting. And but I think you, it's sort of like, remember the More You Know campaign?
Yeah.
I wish we had that again.
I do too.
And I think we need to get that going.
Right.
Because we need to sort of like tease out what's fake and what's real.
Right.
More, but I really do think that people are open to being more socially responsible, but they don't have the tools or the information, and it's also overwhelming.
It's reading labels is a big start.
And sometimes labels aren't even completely authentic.
No, but at least you could try.
Yeah.
And I think we're also, amazingly, we're living through a time right now for all the different reasons that people are taking responsibility, individual action, and kind of stepping forward and being much more aware of what their future needs to be than
by necessity.
By necessity, it's reminiscent of the late 60s.
Totally. I feel like I'm reliving my college days.
I know. And it's incredible that we're seeing all this, but wrapped up in innovation at the same time.
Yeah.
And there are solutions, which is everybody has their own power. I don't care whether you're running a family or you have your own business or you're a billionaire investing in funds or you're creating like the next, Tesla or Facebook, whatever it is. Everybody has the power to make a huge difference. And because of technology right now, it's really, really exciting and a way for us to give people the tools to be able to do that.
Well, that's why I think what Emma's doing right now is hugely important, because it's about how do you get the message out?
Right.
Who do you use to do it? What's the most effective way to reach the people? And the Creative Coalition is doing this now. We have a campaign, which is...
Explain what the Creative Coalition is.
The Creative Coalition is a group that I joined about, 25 years ago. It was founded by Chris Reeves and Susan Sarandon, Ron Silver, and Alec Baldwin. And they took it on when the government was going to defund the National Endowment for the Arts, and went in and lobbied for creativity, basically, and said, this is not a partisan issue. This is where innovation comes from. This is where so many of us got our start, was in, whether it was like a small grant at your school or in your town, and it's also federal funding of arts and education. I was exposed to art and journalism and theater and music. And for so many of us, even if you didn't end up using that as your profession, if that wasn't your ultimate profession,
it
helped you learn how to speak, how to create, how to express,
Right.
And innovation is our greatest export, and entertainment is a huge part of it. So we go and try and just bring people back to how small an amount that is. But it is kind of the green seal, the seal of approval. If someone gets an NEA grant, that's huge.
Yeah.
They also fund, public television and NPR. And so that was how that all started. But we're doing the Right to Bear Arts is a new campaign
doing. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so important because, again, if you're in school, kids are not getting these classes anymore. They're just over. And
it's the first thing they cut.
It's the first thing they cut. And, it's heartbreaking when you see kids not being exposed to music and art and theater and all of this, which we had.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were in Buffalo, I was in New York and LA, and we had the same curriculum.
Yeah, that's right.
We were able to have these things.
That's right.
And so it was just part of what happens when you go to school, and that doesn't exist anymore.
And it kept kids in school. I remember thinking, if I didn't have theater and art, I don't know that I would have been so gung-ho.
And I had journalism. I loved that.
Yes.
And I wrote for the papers. And
I was in all the plays, and I sang in the choir. And I'm going back. We're all going back. We who live like in the Rust Belt, because Buffalo is really more like the Midwest.
Yeah.
we have a campaign where we're going back to our high schools. And much like the garden program with Emma, where you go back to your town and build a garden in your old school, we're going back to interview our old teachers and the kids who are there and talk about how that inspired us to go on and do what we did.
It's so important, which is like communication and motivating is everything for every aspect of your life.
And I think you were right about there's a whole group, a younger generation that is demanding that we move in a new direction and don't go back to the same old failed policies of yesterday. So this whole idea about, yes, people obviously wanted a big change in this last election, but I think the direction of that has to be much more aspirational and more solution oriented and more hopeful.
And empowering.
And empowering.
Right.
Yeah, which means don't...
You can do something.
And that doesn't mean get rid of all the regulations that are keeping the air clean and the water clean.
But that's a whole separate thing. You can do, we can do this ourselves. There's things that we can't do policy-wise. But if we support even huge companies that are doing the right on the right path, then they're just going to keep making those products.
You know, and look at what happened with Toyota and just becoming like the sort of poster child.
You got yours. What were you saying to me in the beginning? Do I really have to buy that little funny?
It looks like a sneaker.
Yes.
It looked like a sneaker.
Yes.
And then I got
nobody else gave me any trouble, by the way. You were the one who paid off.
You said it's the only child that you love.
Yes.
You've come to love.
But then we do, and we did. Yeah. And so this is definitely a change. And so we're doing this, the Emma Impact Summit on March 23rd and 24th at the Montage in Beverly Hills because we do using the Montage because they're LEED certified gold.
Right.
And so, but we're having literally everyone from Van Jones to Jaden Smith, to Wendy Malick, to Ed Begley, to CEOs and great VCs, the head of the Oneida Nation. We're having this incredible group of people who don't necessarily go to and speak at normal sustainability conferences. We, as we do everything out of the box, this is out of the box, and it's all so loud. We're bringing press in. We already have Forbes coming in. We're having all kinds of people.
So what are the other panels going to be?
We have a panel about impact investing. We have a panel about energy and transportation. We have a panel about transparency in consumer products, which is incredibly important. We have Amber Valletta moderating that because she's been in the fashion world for so long. And she has seen what's going on and how you make fabric and that whole process. Mm-hmm. We have a storytellers panel where we've got people talking about how you integrate messaging within stories and content.
That's great.
We have a lot of panels. We literally have two solid days of keynotes and panelists. And we're going to talk about that everywhere online and in the press. People are going to be shooting Facebook Lives. We're going to be, you know, live tweeting and live Facebook and live Instagram. And Snapchat, I think, is going to come there so you could see the stories. And that's what you never get at these insular little conferences where everybody knows each other. Everybody talks to each other all the time. And they think this is a secret. It's the literal opposite. How are we motivating and teaching people if we're not telling them what's going on and what the latest trends are? So I'm so excited about this, and I'm so excited, obviously, that you're there, of course, sharing every single experience from first until will be forever. And I just think this is the best thing we could do because we have the Emma Awards for it's 27 years now, and we've done 17 years of this together. Yeah. And so that is a celebratory moment where you educate. But these are the solutions, and let's go make that happen. We even have an innovation contest like Shark Tank, which
that's so great. We talked about that. Talked about that. That's such a good idea.
Yeah, and Jaden Smith, who's a young entrepreneur, is going to host that part of our. It's over 2 days. We've got a VC panel, just like Shark Tank, and we're going to give funding and a grant and an advisory committee to whoever wins the.
See, I bet somebody picks that up for television.
I think
as a,
so
as
too.
A series. That would make so much sense.
I think
why not?
So. But I just think this is amazing. And it bring we wise people who have lived through so much of this and have dedicated our life to doing this are going to get to look again at like these young innovators, which I think is the world. And they care so much and they get it. And it's really interesting because our investment partners, the investment companies, have said to us, we love you. We don't care at all about you and your generation because you're already investing. We are looking for all of the young investors to go on lifelong patterns of questioning where their money is going to. Of course, they definitely want us to question it as well, but we're not their target audience because those of us who do this are doing it. Other people, you know, they're not sure even how to ask about where their money is invested. And so this is just a whole huge, huge opening that we have that we've never gone into before. And I think this is everything.
And we've always talked about, you know, you vote with your wallet.
Right.
And that's huge. So as a consumer, you do have a vote in the products you believe
in. You wake up every day, you're buying and what you're doing just to live.
And it's very interesting that the whole idea of what are you invested in, people have become much more conscious about. I have to say I was oblivious to that. And in the last few years, I really asked questions and moved out of a lot of stuff. And,
right. We have a vegan investment broker, which we happen to have, who's like into animal, you know, everything, rescues. His house is full of rescue dogs.
No, and you sometimes have to go line by line and say, this is not what I want, and really refine it and make sure that you're, you know, backing the stuff you really believe in.
Right, right. Well, I mean, thank you so much.
Hey, anytime I get to hang out with you is like a bonus round.
Me too. And I think that, I actually think this was like so inspiring, especially because I don't think people know about the wild horses the way they need to. And I really wanted you to bring that up.
Yeah, it's huge. And right now, I don't know if you heard that, I think it was the AG, Department of Agriculture, took down the animal welfare website last week.
That's crazy.
So that would prevent investigators from looking into puppy mills, looking into, you know, livestock. And
we just have to work really hard ourselves.
So, well, and also the Humane Society got right on it and they filed suit and said, no, taxpayers pay for this and you can't take this information away and we have a right to know. And it's just that whole thing about whenever I feel slammed by, oh my God, what's happening? You know, they're undermining so many things that I care about. You have to get up off your ass and go and be part of the solution.
Absolutely.
It hasn't changed at all. And unfortunately, now we all have to be active citizens again. And I think, too, we've taken too much for granted for too long.
We absolutely have.
Yeah.
And now it's in our face. And now it's reminding everybody that it is individual power that we have to embrace.
Yeah. Yeah. And find some really good friends that you can go do something.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah, that you can empower each other.
Yeah.
And it's the best way to make friends. Yeah.
Yes, it is the best way to have fun, make friends. And it's the best way to do things together that you just feel so amazing about. And it helps you in your soul. And it helps you as a person while you're making all these changes.
Yeah, so. And we then are proactive citizens.
Right.
And, you know, democracy requires that of us.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to Organic Lunch with Debbie Levin. Be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, and wherever you get your podcasts. You can find the show online as well at www.environmentalmedianetwork.com. This is Debbie with Organic Lunch with Debbie Levin, and we thank lineupmedia.fm for hosting our show.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.